Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hey everyone, welcome into the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Kyle Yates and I am your host. I'm joined as always by my co-host Mike Taglier. You can find both of us on Twitter at KyleYNFL and at MikeTaglierNFL. You can also find and follow us on Instagram as well at KyleYNFL and at MikeTaglier. Tags, mental health check time, buddy. You doing okay?
No, I think I know it's the NFL season when I start waking up at 5 o'clock unprompted. Like, I never set an alarm because I'm always someone that gets up before 6:30 anyway. But now that I'm getting up at five, I feel like NFL season's actually here because I'm starting to panic about all the work that I have to do. So it's definitely NFL season. We are just over a week away, and I'm excited, man, because I understand that there's a lot going on right now, but it's almost like an escape that I need mentally. I need to stop talking about 2019. Stats. I need something new to talk about, and we are just over a week from having that. So think of it like a kid that's about to get his favorite video game console or something like that. Like, that's how I feel as an adult, and it feels like I need this. So yeah, mental check. I guess you could say I'm okay. I'll be even better in like 9 days.
right. Check again in 9 days. Hey, we were talking with our guest beforehand. He's kind of in the same boat we are. I'm very excited for today's guest. That's Sigmund Bloom, co-owner of footballguys.com. He can be found on Twitter at Sigmund Bloom. I've just been glued to his Twitter recently as he highlights all the important news happening in training camp. Sig, welcome into the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast.
Oh, it's good to be back. And this is our time, right? The attention is focused, maybe more attention on fantasy football for the next week and a half than there will be for the rest of the year. So it makes us feel relevant. It makes us feel like we're not just doing this for ourselves, even though we are just doing it for ourselves. and it's fun. And I think that without getting too, big picture-y, at this time, finding things that we have in common, things that make us American across lines, is therapeutic. And if Richard Nixon and Hunter Thompson could hang out and talk about football, then we can all hang out and talk about football too, no matter what our differences are away from football.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, Yates, Sig just said there, he's like, we're doing this for ourselves, but realistically, I don't even know if I can say that anymore. I mean, I'm bringing this up because yesterday we obviously talked about Rykel Armstead and the Leonard Fournette news that broke. Everyone in all my leagues went and like legitimately just grabbed him off waivers in the leagues that he was available. And now he was owned in a lot of leagues, but it's almost like, the first thought that goes through my head, it's like, oh, we have to update rankings. I have to update the player note. I have to do this and that. And then it's like, after that, I go to the waivers and I'm like, what the hell am I doing? All the guys, everybody was already there. So we're here for you. We're here to talk to you guys about fantasy football today. And I would rather be nowhere else than talking to you two.
For sure. It's going to be a good show, guys. Before we get into the content for today's show, though, I want to make sure that our listeners know about one of the most important tools that we offer. That is our Cheat Sheet Creator. This is incredibly easy to use and allows you to import rankings from anywhere on the web or even a spreadsheet. You want to use Tags' rankings to draft with, you want to use your own, or even combine Tags' as my rankings. It's super easy and convenient with the Cheat Sheet Creator. It also allows you the ability to export these rankings to Excel or use them in both our Draft Simulator and Draft Assistant tools. Plus, this was also recently redesigned, so it has a sleek and intuitive new interface. It automatically saves all changes, and everything can now be done on one page. Again, that's our cheat sheet creator, and you can find it at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. Also, don't forget that our MVP and Hall of Fame subscribers can get the most out of the cheat sheet creator with the ability to create custom cheat sheets and have custom auction values. Fortunately, we've got a special offer going on right now for 6 free months of our Hall of Fame package, which is our highest subscription tier and a $65 value. Check out fantasypros.com/offers to claim this amazing offer today. All right, I've got a couple of news items that I want to touch on super quick here, fellas. So first, Cooper Kupp is reportedly only dealing with ankle soreness and should be good to go for week one. No concerns there, but I did just want to make sure that we mentioned it on the show today. The other big news here dropped shortly after we finished recording yesterday. Alvin Kamara has had an unexcused absence from training camp the past 3 days, and it is believed to be contract related. That's from Adam Schefter on Twitter. I want to get both of your guys' thoughts here on this situation and whether or not, ultimately, you're still willing to take him in the top 5 picks of redraft leagues. Tags, I'll go to you first, and then we'll go to Sig.
Yeah, I mean, we should have really been looking closer at this. Like, we heard about Joe Mixon earlier in the offseason talking about he was going to hold out if he didn't have a new contract, so it wasn't really surprising there. We knew that Alvin Kamara was coming up on a contract year two, so I guess we should have seen the tea leaves and how things were going to fall, and I think Kamara played it right in terms of, I'm going to show up to training camp, I'm not going to cause a scene, and it's now gotten to the point where we're now a week away from the season, and he still doesn't have a contract. Fortunately, Nick Underhill, someone who covers the Saints pretty religiously, he's connected there, and he says that the two are closing in on a deal, that about a week ago that they were far off, and that's why Kamara ultimately walked away, but they are getting closer by the day, and he expects something to get done very soon. So I'm still probably going to take Alvin Kamara at 4, though I would understand if someone wanted to move him back on their draft boards. But let's not pretend that Dalvin Cook doesn't come without some sort of risk, that guys like Joe Mixon don't, that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, obviously a rookie, you know. The question, Sig, would you consider, if you were drafting tonight, would you consider, if you have 4 overall, would you consider taking Michael Thomas or Derrick Henry there at 4 overall?
Yeah, Henry. I think the answer is just Henry. Go to the shelter of Henry, who has a contract. Isn't that nice? And I think that what's overlooked here is when Ryan Tannehill took over, from that point forward, Derrick Henry was the number 2 running back in fantasy football. And it was Christian McCaffrey, big gap. Derrick Henry, big gap. Everybody else. So it wasn't just he edged out the pack to be the number 2 running back. Now, you might be betting on the Titans not being nearly as efficient, but unless that's your stance, Derrick Henry is underrated anyway. Maybe we should have been looking at Derrick Henry. I mean, look, there's arguments for Kamara. He was not healthy for a good part of the season. The Saints offense could be even more efficient. But maybe Henry should have been there all along. Maybe Henry should have even been a consideration at number 3. Where it gets a little tougher is Thomas versus Kamara or Cook. And maybe the name we should be bringing up is Clyde Edwards-Helaire if you're at number 5, because it's team build. You might not want to take a Michael Thomas at number 5, because then you can't take as much advantage of the wide receiver depth later on, and you're going to have to take a running back that you don't like, right? Because if you're picking 5th in a typical 12-team league, by the time you come up in the second round, maybe Aaron Jones or James Conner is going to be your second round pick, which it doesn't feel that great. So I think that's where it gets a little bit trickier. But Derrick Henry as the number 3-4 running back might have been the right answer all along.
Tags, I'll really quick just throw this back to you. Like, we've talked about Derrick Henry, that you're betting on him hitting, you know, he had 303 rush attempts last season and 16 rushing touchdowns. Like, those are very, very high marks. If there is a running back who could repeat that, it's Derrick Henry, right? Like, just with his body type and his work, the workload that he's guaranteed in this offense. Again, like Sig mentioned, you're betting on efficiency. But at this point, would you rather have the stability and guaranteed touches that Derrick Henry is going to provide, or would you personally swing for the fences and go with Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
I mean, I'd probably go with Henry. I think Sig's right in the fact that we always revisit this, and it's really easy to get caught up in all the hype, right? Like, I love Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I love that he landed with the Chiefs. I love all this, right? But we've never seen him play in the NFL, so there are some unknowns there, whereas Derrick Henry, whenever he's gotten those carries, he's produced, and he continually produces. Is Derrick Henry going to finish as the RB1? No, he's not. But is he going to lose you your fantasy league because you took him at number 4 overall? No, he's not. So, you know, it's that old saying that you can't win your fantasy league in the first round, but you can help yourself lose it. And if Alvin Kamara, for whatever reason, doesn't show up, or if he holds out for a couple games, or Dalvin Cook does the same thing, then all of a sudden you're looking at yourself, kicking yourself, saying, I should have just went with Henry. He may have been projected for like 15 less points in my projections, but who gives a crap in the grand scheme of things?
Right. Yeah. The gap between these guys up at the top is not wide, right? It's not a wide margin. So then when you're looking at, okay, it all comes down to, how do I want to build my roster? Do I want the stability, or do I want this upside with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who could, in this offense, could very well finish as the RB1, or he could be a rookie that doesn't adjust to the NFL well in an offseason that didn't have preseason games and finishes outside the top 12. Like, there's just a very, very wide margin, whereas we know what Derrick Henry is going to provide you. So, all right, guys. Anyway, let's transition into the discussion for today's show. Sig is one of the best fantasy football analysts out there, guys. If you've never listened to him, I'm super excited for you to hear him. And so we wanted to have him on to talk through his rankings and guys that he likes more than consensus, or guys that he's fading compared to industry consensus. Again, this is being measured against ECR, which stands for Expert Consensus Rankings, and it takes all the rankings from 120 or so experts and puts them together. I want to touch on the running backs first here, Sig. So let's start with three running backs that you like more than ECR.
This year, and it's all about what we've learned since training camp, right? And by the way, I just want to say I'm glad that Mike name-dropped Nick Underhill, who is tremendously connected and, as he said, very much obsessive about the team in a way we want a beat writer to be. If he's not sending off alarm bells, then I'm not setting off alarm bells either. So what has changed since we put together our preseason rankings? Let's start with Antonio Gibson. I think that we aren't quite reckoning his actual ceiling, just because Washington sees what he can do. They're giving him an immediate opportunity. And then as he produces with that opportunity, his opportunity will grow. I think that this isn't a situation like David Johnson as a rookie that needed Chris Johnson to get hurt before he won leagues for us. I think that Antonio Gibson will get enough opportunity right away. And just that upside, because he's still available 7th, 8th round. He's a bench pick that can help you win your league. In a similar vein, Zach Moss, he's just gotten positive buzz almost every single practice period. He's going to get receptions. He's going to get goal line carries. He's going to get the carries to close out the game, which the Bills should be a winning team, so that should happen frequently. I think we've been underestimating him. And then the last guy I'll throw out there is very much underrated right now is Jerick McKinnon. And I still like Raheem Mostert. I'm not backing off of Raheem Mostert. This is not an anti-Raheem Mostert take. But McKinnon, by all reports, and what we always need to look for here is agreement among the beat writers. It's not an isolated take. It's every beat writer agreeing. And also, we've been doing this long enough that we have a feel for which beat writers might be prone to getting carried away. We all do it. I do it. And which ones are a little more sober and level-headed. So when they get excited about a player, it really means something. All the reports out of San Francisco are that McKinnon looks like McKinnon of old. And he's got the receiving running back role. And he's a good running back. We forget because I haven't seen him for 2 years. He's good. He didn't quite live up to the contract, but he still has a chance to. This is a good offense. The passing game has really seen the names get depleted since camp opened. So I think that McKinnon has a chance. Look, it's exactly what you want in like a 17th, 18th round pick. You take him, you see how he looks the first few weeks, and you go from there. But he should be somebody that's a priority pick for everybody in the late rounds.
All right, so Tags, let's touch on, and I love the way that you listed those out all together, Sig. So let's just talk through each of these guys individually, Tags, and let's get your thoughts here. So Antonio Gibson, we've been talking about him regularly this offseason, that he was someone that I loved coming out of college. I had him really, really high in my rankings pretty much all offseason, and then with the Darius Geis release, that brought kind of the industry up. However, I've got Antonio Gibson still around RB50 in ECR, so do you think he needs to be much higher than that, or do you think he's being kind of priced appropriately?
I have him at RB40, so I didn't realize I was higher than the consensus on him, which feels kind of crazy because I've actually been saying that I'm like toning it back because I don't think that there's much value to be had in this Washington backfield, just because Adrian Peterson is going to get those dozen touches per game. Adrian Peterson would retire if he knew that he was going to be sitting on the bench. He's not a guy that's going to walk in and see 5 carries a game and be happy with it. We saw that with New Orleans, and he forced his way out of there. Being with Washington, now with Rivera. I mean, when you have a new coach come in especially a defensive-minded one, you're going to see the pass attempts regress. And this was already a team that didn't throw the ball a whole lot. And that's where Gibson's supposed to get his value. The reason that some people are excited is because this team really doesn't have a tight end. You know, Logan Thomas is the one getting hype in camp. That's never a good thing. So when you don't have a tight end, obviously the running backs are going to be able to get some volume there. The question is, do they involve J.D. McKissic more than we think? Adrian Peterson, again, is going to get those goal line touches because he should. Gibson is a physical freak, but part of me wonders, is he the Mecole Hardman of this year, where Hardman was extremely efficient last year, but the coaches don't want to put so much on his plate because he was a guy in college that just never saw a whole lot of touches. And I just don't know if this offense is built. Like if Antonio Gibson was with the Saints, I think that I would be ecstatic about him. I'd be drafting him everywhere because I want to tie myself to those high scoring offenses. I just don't know if I can say Gibson in a best case scenario scores more than 5 or 6 touchdowns this year and that he's sporadic in how he's going to distribute his fantasy points. So that's why I'm not crazy on Gibson. I understand the potential. Yates, you like him. You like him quite a bit. And you've talked about him and I do like him, but it's all, you have to factor in the situation that he's in, and Scott Turner hasn't proved to be a competent play caller, I don't think, just yet. I don't think we can say that. And with the state of this offensive line, I'm just not excited about the offense.
So I did look this back up. So it's crazy. Antonio Gibson's overall ECR has risen 23 spots in the past week. So he is up at RB 43 in ECR right now. So Sig, just for context, where do you have him ranked?
About number 30.
There you go.
And I think it's just as simple as there's a cliff, as it is, fellas. Running back twos in fantasy, the ranking, like the running back 13 to 24, it's been terrible. It's been a bloodbath over the last month, Leonard Fournette being the last one to drop. So now it's getting murky, muddy between the running backs that we thought, well, they'll start out the season as running back two and we'll see, and the running backs we would take and say, well, they'll be on your bench and we'll see what they can do. And Antonio Gibson's in the see what we can do group, but he could be more valuable than, you know, on the other side of one of the guys I was talking about, like Devin Singletary. You know, we might, a few weeks into the season, say he's a better start than Devin Singletary, or he's a better start than Le'Veon Bell. Who knows what's going to happen there? And I mean, so I think that running back 30 kind of represents that there's hope, but it also puts a stress on, like we were talking about earlier, getting that first round running back. So at least you have one of those spots settled every week.
Guys, 77 total career touches in college for Antonio Gibson, 14 total touchdowns. That's ridiculous. So looking at this guy, I mean, Tags, you said the argument, yeah, I don't know if he's going to be utilized in the red zone. And again, with Washington, how frequently are they going to actually be in the red zone? But yet Antonio Gibson can take these plays, then he can make these big plays, right? He can take one to the house and make a 50-yard run, and it can win your fantasy matchup. So I'm with Sig. I have him all the way up at RB 32 right now. I think he's going to get a ton of volume through the air, which is where it's going to inflate his value here this year. So I love the call there. Tags, let's go to Zach Moss. Obviously, you've been the Zach Moss guy this entire offseason. And I mean, I liked Zach Moss coming out. I had injury concerns, right, which plummeted him down my rankings. But yet, even with that being said, I still have Zach Moss well above ECR and his ADP. His ADP is in like the low 40s. So let's talk about Zach Moss here. Where are you comfortable? Where are you comfortable taking Zach Moss? Because right now, RB 37 is his ECR. So let's talk about that. In comparison to his ECR, are you comfortable with that price tag?
I'm in line with the ECR actually on him. I do think that there's some question marks now around the neck, and that was going back to college, is that I felt like Zach Moss was a top five talent in this class at running back, but the health was always a concern, and that's why I thought he would actually fall in the draft. So when you saw the Bills take him with a third round pick, I was like, wow. I mean, that's obviously showing something. They really did like Moss almost as much as I did, because that means if there were no injury concerns, maybe they would have drafted him in the second round. But being paired with Devin Singletary, a guy that last year saw a bunch of light fronts, like he's seeing 6-7 man fronts all day long while Frank Gore is being, you know, run up against a wall. And I don't think that happens this year if Devin Singletary is going to be the main guy. Devin Singletary isn't going to see. Devin Singletary last year, the lowest in the NFL, he saw 8 man fronts, 8 or more man fronts on just 5 or 6% of his carries. That was the lowest in the NFL. So it's understandable that he had high yards per carry. He was extremely inefficient in the passing game. So, you know, Zach Moss, we've been hearing a lot of good things about him on camp, including his pass catching prowess. And I think that he's a better running back than Devin Singletary. He may not be as elusive, like have that wiggle that Singletary does, but he's like a guy that's going to get what's blocked. He's going to give you everything he's got. And that's why he's dealt with injuries, because he is that bruiser that he'll put his body on the line. He doesn't really care. but I am worried about this neck injury a little bit. So ideally I have him as an RB4 on my fantasy team, just because I don't want to have to rely on him right out of the gate. And I kind of want to see how this backfield kind of plays out.
Recently in ECR, Devin Singletary was all the way up at like RB22. His ECR has fallen to RB28, and Zach Moss was in the 40s. He's now up to RB37. So Sig, put this into context for us. Where do you have him, Zach Moss, ranked?
I think maybe a spot or two above Gibson, right around there. And so around running back 30. And I think that a way to think about all this, like you said, put it in context, is looking at running back committees and looking at the spread in ADP and asking the question, does that make sense? For instance, in this one, as good as Devin Singletary looked at times last year, if Zach Moss is getting the goal line carries, if Zach Moss is getting receptions in this offense, does it make sense for him to be 10 spots below Singletary? I think that Gordon and Lindsay is another one that we should look at and ask if it makes sense. I think in some of these cases, you can find where all of the training camp news is not being reflected accurately in the ADP.
The Fantasy Pros Fantasy Football Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel. This season, there's a brand new way to play fantasy football on FanDuel. Introducing Best Ball Contests, the simplest way to play season-long fantasy. In a Best Ball Contest, there's no lineups to set, no waivers to claim, and no trades to make. Simply draft 20 players at the start of the season. Then, every week, you'll automatically get points for your top 9 performers at set positions. At the end of the season, the teams with the top scores take home the cash. I recently did my first ever best ball draft on FanDuel, and now I'm hooked. I love that it's so easy to use, and it's not a hassle to manage throughout the season. I get to do my favorite part of fantasy football, which is drafting, and then I don't have to worry about making the right start-sit decisions, or even worry about the waiver wire. It's a different strategy too, so if you're tired of playing the same format every single year with your friends, you need to check out Best Ball on FanDuel. Best Ball contests have a 12-player max, so don't worry if you're not a seasoned fantasy pro. And if you want to try your hand at Best Ball, you can enter a free contest or play for as little as $1. If you're new to FanDuel, you can even get a 20% bonus on your first deposit, up to $500 when you sign up at FanDuel.com/FantasyPros. So be sure to go to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros to start drafting for best ball at FanDuel. All right, let's move on to Jerick McKinnon, RB68 in ECR. So I guess that, or I understand that a lot of experts are just looking at Jerick McKinnon and they're saying, okay, injured the past two previous seasons, right? And he had a ton of hype. So coming into those years, hasn't been able to be on the field in San Francisco. Have we even seen him on the field in San Francisco for a regular season game? I honestly don't think so. So looking at McKinnon, yes, pass catching, absolutely great athlete. But now you're looking at a backfield that is comprised of Tevin Coleman's still going to be involved here. You're going to have Raheem Mostert potentially being the lead guy in this backfield. Sig, put it into context. Again, we're just going to use this word over and over again. Is Jerick McKinnon someone that you're willing to invest in and having high hopes for? Or is this something like, I'm in a super deep league and I just want to throw the dart here and just see if it hits?
I call it early reveal players. When you get to the end of your bench, it's okay to take a few bench players like Antonio Gibson that you're going to hold maybe for the whole season, even if you don't start them, to see if it bears fruit. But your last 3, 4, 5 picks should be players that, based on what we see in week one, or maybe week one and week two, are either going to show they're worth more than the late round price you paid for them, and they're going to contribute to your fantasy team, or you can move on without remorse. You don't want to be taking players in the late rounds that are going to clog up the end of your bench, because this year, and my co-host Cecil Lammy is putting the term out there, second draft, that the waiver wire runs in the first 3-4 weeks of the season are going to be like a second fantasy football draft because of the likely injury frequency. So the last thing you want to do is take somebody.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Who you got to wait and see what you have. And this is why you may be a little more hesitant to take like a Brandon Ayuk or a Jalen Reagor in short bench leagues. And this is, by the way, in the background, we always hear. I mean, obviously, if you're listening to this show, you care about your fantasy football prowess. You care about how your team does. How can I get better? How can I be good at fantasy football? The first thing is know your scoring and lineups, because the difference in this question between I have 5 bench spots and I have 10 bench spots can be everything. So, but I think you hit it when you said, McKinnon's a guy that you take. And if Jerick McKinnon looks like peak Jerick McKinnon from his Minnesota years in whatever workload he gets, then we know that he's worth holding on to. He'll be better than Tevin Coleman, at least. And if he limps off the field, or if he only touches the ball two or three times and looks nondescript, then we know we can move on.
Yeah, Tags, I mean, let's put that into context, and I'm so glad that you mentioned that, Sig, about the first 4 weeks and that being just a that's going to be crazy, right? Like, so, and it's crazy. I was going to bring up Jalen Reagor, because let's just say you're in, Tags, you're in a standard, you know, six bench spot league, right? And you say, okay, am I going to be willing to take a super late dart throw on a Jerick McKinnon if I loaded up on wide receiver early? You know, I'm looking at my bench. I need a bench running back. Absolutely need a bench running back. Are you going to be looking for someone like Jerick McKinnon, or would you be rostering Jalen Reagor, who might not play until week four?
Yeah, it really depends. And I love, again, Sig brought it up, but we've been talking about this all offseason, saying that you need the guys on the end of your roster that you're able to cut bait with. You're going to find out week one, like Michael Pittman. You like Michael Pittman, Yates, but if he only comes out there and plays 20 snaps in week one, you're going to cut bait with him. It's the same thing with me, like someone like John Ross. If he loses the job to T. Higgins, I'm going to do the same exact thing. You need guys like that. And Jerick McKinnon, he's a very interesting one to talk about, because imagine those people out there that drafted Leonard Fournette that are now dealing with this aftermath. And, you know, Rykel Armstead was Ross. And Chris Thompson's already rostered, and you're looking for like a last ditch, so like a solution that you could probably plug in for a week or two and try and get through this. McKinnon is the perfect guy to grab, because he's a guy that, you know, replacing Matt Breida is one thing. Tevin Coleman had a role last year. Raheem Mostert had a role last year. This team racked up over 420 rushing attempts last year, and now they don't have any pass catchers. Like, Brandon Ayuk is nursing a hamstring injury. Jalen Hurd's out for the year. Deebo Samuel's missing a few games. George Kittle is now dealing with something with a hamstring. It's a mess, and you don't even really know who they're going to throw the ball to. So they need Jerick McKinnon now more than ever, and they're playing against the Arizona Cardinals in week one. That's a matchup that can be exploited. So
yeah.
I love the call on McKinnon here.
All right, let's go over to three running backs that you like less than ECR.
Some of these, I feel like I'm almost picking on ECR. You know?
Yeah, it feels bad to do that, doesn't it?
Right, like Sony Michel. I mean, I'm picking on ECR, but it's probably just there's a handful of analysts who are still ranking him based on the hopes when he was drafted in the first round, I guess. But I think it's pretty clear that I don't think he's draftable at this point. DeAndre Swift, and I'm not sure that he's better than Kerryon Johnson. I think Kerryon Johnson's actually healthier right now. And on that note, we have Todd Gurley. And I just think that the easiest way to explain why you're not taking Todd Gurley is look at the wide receivers available at the same point in your draft. What's the payoff? It's not enough to make me pass on DK Metcalf or Terry McLaurin or whoever your favorite is in that part of your draft.
Yeah, so let's touch on these tags just super quick. Sony Michel, I'm off too. You like Damian Harris, but really, realistically, Lamar Miller coming off the pup. Like, they have Lamar Miller, Rex Burkhead, James White, Sony Michel, Damian Harris, all potentially going to be healthy for week one. Obviously, I don't think they're going to carry five running backs into their week one roster. Someone will be cut. Do you want to even touch this backfield?
Ideally, no. Ideally, you stay as far away as possible, just because I don't know what the benefit is here, because even Sony Michel, the guy who you were with Brady, you were like, hey, he's going to get goal line touches. He's going to score some touchdowns. Now with Cam Newton there, he's going to lose a couple of those goal line touches. I don't see the upside here with him. If you get him as like a bench, you know, like an RB4, 5, it's kind of like a guy that you just plug into your lineup. You know, you're not expecting much, but you're hoping to walk away with like 5-6 points out of your running back position. Like, again, like in a Leonard Fournette situation, I guess, but I'm not excited about it. And that's, you don't want to load your bench with guys like that just clutter it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Okay, so then DeAndre Swift, Sig alluded to it, like he has missed some time in training camp with a leg injury. I can look that up in a second. But so he's missed some time. And for a rookie who didn't have preseason, that's going to be a detriment. And so I think he will be ready for week one. Again, we'll keep you updated as we hear more news. But what's the benefit to drafting him at his current draft price, which is pretty, it's in the RB, it's a top 24 running back, I believe. It's on that edge. So Tags, what's the benefit here of DeAndre Swift? Obviously, you and I were both fans of his tape coming out of college, so he's a good running back. But in this offense, with Kerryon Johnson in the fold, is this a backfield that is worth investing in?
No, I mean, I was never really big into getting Swift as an RB2 or anything like that. If you get him as a flex player, I think it's fine, because I do see this as a timeshare. And I think Sig's right. Both of these running backs, DeAndre Swift, I had him as my, I think, number three running back in this class. I felt like he's really good at everything, but he's great at almost nothing, where it's almost like, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire had traits, Jonathan Taylor had traits that were great, and if they could find a coach that could accentuate those things, I'd like him a lot more. Swift is in a weird spot because Kerryon Johnson went on the field. I think he's a good football player. I think he's a three down back that can play in passing downs. It's not like Swift is the only three down back on that team. And let's not pretend that the Lions are a high powered offense. I understand that with Matthew Stafford last year, they scored a lot more points in those first eight games, but that's a very, very, very small sample size of what we've seen under Matt Patricia. And I don't really want to tie myself to that. Just you're buying basically its ceiling at this point. And again, if you were able to get him in that Devin Singletary range, that's where I'm willing to take him, around that RB 27-28 territory. Just because, again, there's no guarantees in that territory, but when a team spends a high second round pick on someone, you want to believe that they're going to get him on the field and get him at least a dozen touches per game. So for a flex player, fine, but as an RB2, no.
Yeah, so Sig, to put this into context, so the guys going above DeAndre Swift in ECR right now, right, are Kareem Hunt at all the way up at RB23. His ECR has risen over the past week or so. So Kareem Hunt, Cam Akers, Raheem Mostert, and DeAndre Swift. Who is the guy in that range that you're like, I want to target, I want to walk out of that range with this running back?
Mostert or Hunt. And I can't tell people Akers is the wrong answer either. Mostert is pretty simple. I think that there's just some overthinking. He's the best running back in a good running game. The reports out of San Francisco are that he has been the clear number one running back in practices. He's looked like the number one running back, too, even if Tevin Coleman gets some ceremonial carry to begin the game. Remember, last 6 weeks or so of the season, Coleman was still starting, I'm making air quotes, but it was Mostert who had like seven touchdowns and 70 or so touches to Coleman's 25. So I think that we're looking for reasons that Mostert isn't just going to continue the trajectory that he was on last year, and I haven't seen any yet.
You mentioned Todd Gurley as that last guy. So Tags, let's talk about Todd Gurley here. I mean, ECR has him all the way up at, I'm still scrolling, RB16. So he's in this range, Todd Gurley, James Conner, Chris Carson above him. So Chris Carson at RB15, Gurley at 16, James Conner at 17. Who's the guy in that range that you want to walk out of your draft with?
I mean, Conner is the one that I'm walking away with more than often than not, and I'm drafting him earlier and earlier. And someone
all three of those guys have injury concerns.
Yeah, for sure. But Conner, when he's been on the field, it's like he's a young running back. He doesn't have any major health concerns. I understand that he's missed some time, but he's a guy that's going to be in that workhorse role with Ben Roethlisberger back under center. He would be in the end of the first round conversation if we knew that he was going to play all 16 games. So getting him in the third round makes a lot of sense. Gurley is like a guy that I was high on, and then I was kind of like, all right, there's definitely some concerns. And then you have to like sit back and say, okay, I'm high. I love Julio Jones, obviously. I love Calvin Ridley. I like Hayden Hurst. And it's like, someone is going to disappoint me. It's going to happen. And so if I have to narrow it down and say which one's probably going to disappoint me, it would probably be Todd Gurley. But knowing that there's a lack of competition on the roster, like Brian Hill and Ito Smith don't do it for me. I still think that Todd Gurley is locked into 15 plus touches per game as long as he can handle them. And this is a high scoring offense, so I'm not going to avoid Todd Gurley purposely. I also am not going to go out of my way to draft him over someone like James Conner.
Attention fantasy football commissioners and champions. You put in the time. Now reward yourself in your league with something worth bragging about. TrophySmack.com has you covered with customizable trophies, championship belts, rings, loser awards, and more. TrophySmack offers free shipping and free engraving to immortalize your league's champions. Best of all, our listeners get a free championship ring with any trophy or belt purchase. Just add your free ring to cart with your epic trophy or belt and use promo code FANTASYPROS at checkout. Visit TrophySmack.com/FANTASYPROS to customize your league's trophy now. TrophySmack.com/FANTASYPROS. All right, let's pivot here to wide receiver. Sig, let's go with three guys that you are higher on than ECR.
Adam Thielen, he's going to get 200 targets this year. Tyler Boyd, maybe he's not going to get 200 targets this year, but he's going to lead the Bengals and targets. And I'm really excited about Joe Burrow. Preview for the quarterback section of this discussion.
Yes.
I want to catch part of the Joe Burrow comment.
Yeah.
Tyler Boyd's the best way to do it. And I'll bring up Jerry Jeudy. And for the second time, I'll bring up Cecil Lammy in this one. Cecil has been very good to us based on what he finds out in training camp. 6, 7, 8 years ago. I don't remember what it was. He gave us Julius Thomas. You know, he gave us C.J. Anderson. He's given us these gifts. He said, however high you're drafting Jerry Jeudy, it's probably not high enough. So, you know, based on what he's saying, it basically, Jeudy is just getting open at will, which matches what we saw at Alabama. And Drew Locke, because I think Drew Locke probably wants to succeed, knows that throwing to the open guy is a good strategy. And you know, we can talk about what this means for Cortland Sutton, et cetera. But I feel like, let me put it this way, guys. I look back at all my drafts before Cecil told me that, told us that, because it was on our show. And I said, oh no, I don't have enough Jerry Jeudy.
So let's just start there. Let's start at the bottom and work our way back up, Tags, because I heard you like giggling. Okay, so Jerry Jeudy, I mean, he was both of our wide receiver one in this rookie class. Open at will. Getting open at will does not surprise me at all, but it's always just been the passing volume of this offense. And again, you know, you had Noah Fant involved. Cortland Sutton is a beast. And then, of course, KJ Hamler being involved too. I liked Hamler too, but he's been struggling with injury. He might not be on the field to start the season. So, Jerry Jeudy, are we overlooking Jerry Jeudy in our drafts?
I mean, it's possible. After hearing Sig go on about that, about Cecil, Cecil is tied in with those Broncos. You know, you will not find a bigger Jerry Jeudy fan than me. You won't. In my dynasty rankings, I have him as a top 16 wide receiver. I'm willing to pay for him. People were talking. He was falling to like a 7th or 8th pick in dynasty rookie drafts. I think it's terrible. I think that the Raiders will rue the day when they chose Henry Ruggs over him. I think that people talking about CeeDee Lamb like he's the next coming Calvin Johnson they're going to be disappointed. But Jerry Jeudy is a guy that I absolutely love. But Sig, the question I want to ask you, and I love Jeudy the player, and I've heard the reports out of camp. My question is, are you worried that there's not enough to go around between him and Cortland Sutton? And I'm trying to find that fine line, because Cortland Sutton is not someone I'm getting in drafts, because I have him right now at wide receiver 25. I like the player in Cortland Sutton. They're different. Him and Jeudy are different players. Jeudy's more versatile in terms of what he offers in Pat Shurmur's scheme, because he could play the slot, whereas Cortland Sutton's really not that guy. So is the gap between those two way too big? Where do you have Cortland Sutton? Where do you have Jerry Jeudy after talking with Cecil?
I don't know the exact place I have them, but I definitely have a ranking that Jeudy, I think I moved equal to or ahead of CeeDee Lamb. Still love CeeDee Lamb this year too, as your first redraft wide receiver, rookie wide receiver. And Sutton is well out of that range. Again, the names are familiar. TJ Chark and Terry McLaurin and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, all your favorite, say mostly 5th round receivers. That's where Sutton's been going. I think that's too high. And this is our crystal ball stuff, guys. And Cecil told a credible story, the idea being that Drew Lock, and you're right, it was a low volume pass offense. So one element of the puzzle here is, do they loosen things up and let Drew Lock do more, pass more often this year than he did last year when he got on the field? But then the second part of it is just his decision-making process. And Cortland Sutton, so we all remember Sammy Watkins with the Rams, right? Tactically, very valuable. Fantasy-wise, zero value. But what Cortland Sutton can do is he can cancel out Casey Hayward. He can cancel out Trayvon Mullen. Who does the Kansas City? I can't even name one of their cornerbacks right now. It doesn't matter.
I can't right? even.
Rashad Breeland.
I know. I'm.
No, I'm just.
Exactly. No, I mean, the point is, and if it's Rashad Breeland, then it doesn't.
He's suspended.
I was just about to say he's suspended. Yeah, doesn't help.
So tactically, if Cortland Sutton can still win on those contested catches, but I think that the decision-making process for Locke is just going to be one of those situations where it's that comfort, it's that trust, and Jeudy is creating it already, where Cortland Sutton has some value. I just don't think Cortland Sutton's going to be the guy that Locke is thinking when it's 3rd and 7. You know, I don't know that Cortland Sutton in the red zone. I know that we like to think of the guys on those fades and skying for the ball, but really, it's if you can create separation quickly in those small spaces, that's the guy you're going to really count on. So I agree with you, Tags, that you know there's some structural issues in terms of the pass attempts, and not just Cortland Sutton, because you know downstream, we've got Noah Fant.
Melvin Gordon, too.
Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay. Because Lindsay is totally over that wrist issue now, which I think limited him as a receiver last year, and he'll bounce back, too. So, you know, there's a question of mouths to be fed. But, again, like, where do you have to take Judy? Like, eighth or ninth round?
If
you
Judy say is going off the board right now as the wide receiver 52. Comparison, Emmanuel Sanders is going off the board as the wide receiver 44. Give me Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just really easy. I mean, the risks is there, but it's not priced in correctly in terms of risk versus reward.
Yeah. All right, let's touch on Tyler Boyd tags. I'm just going to turn this over to you. You get 30 seconds to talk about how much you love them.
We don't need to talk about Tyler Boyd. Had like 150 targets in the first year of Zach Taylor's offense. Obviously, A.J. Green is a guy that you have to worry about some injury concerns. T. Higgins, John Ross, they're the number three options. Tyler Boyd is going to get 120-plus targets. He's undervalued.
Yep, I completely agree. I love Tyler Boyd this year. And then Adam Thielen. So the thing that I just want to touch on super quick here, Sig, if you have him above ECR, his ECR is right now is wide receiver 11. So just how high do you have Adam Thielen?
6 or even 5. You know, you don't have to do it, but I would almost say if you want to go wide receiver in the second round, for me that's more of a quarterback tight end round, unless you're picking early in the second. Thielen would be the guy who deserves that pick. But you can get him in the third or maybe even in the early fourth in some drafts. I just think that all roads lead to Adam Thielen in this offense. I'm also fascinated with the idea that the Vikings will pass more than we're projecting. They did get Yannick Ngakoue, but they've got three new corners that they're breaking in. And that could really change expectations for the ceilings of all, you know, Irv Smith, not Justin Jefferson. Again, preview of what's about to come. So I just think that Thielen, without Stephon Diggs, we don't know how high the volume could go, but there's no reason. Kirk Cousins is an efficient quarterback. Kirk Cousins is a good decision maker. That means the right decision is going to be Adam Thielen often.
That's fair. I mean, it's crazy. 2018, I'm looking at the Minnesota Vikings pass attempts, 606 pass attempts in 2018, and then we saw Kubiak come back in into the fold, 466 pass attempts last season with Kubiak as like the assistant, what was he, the assistant head coach, but now he's the offensive coordinator, and this is a run first guy. So I think if you're looking at the other options, and Sig, you alluded to it, so we'll just jump right into it. If Justin Jefferson is someone that you're not high on, I can absolutely see the path to just give Adam Thielen all the targets he can handle. So let's just pivot right here into wide receivers that you like less than ECR. I'm assuming Justin Jefferson is one of them.
He just has done nothing to merit that. And again, as we were talking about, Justin Jefferson's the kind of player that you take, and now you feel like you have to sit on him for, what, a month before you cut him? Because, well, let's just see. We know he's not going to start week one. It's Olabisi Johnson. So I just don't see the upside there in that pick. Cooper Kupp, we talked about at the top of the show, you know, all clear on the ankle, but the Rams offense is going to undergo some structural changes from the offense that made Cooper Kupp a, I think for a little while there, he was close to the number one fantasy receiver if he wasn't in the first half of the year. I just think that it's more of a wide net supporting cast now, including the other Jefferson, Van Jefferson, who's had a tremendous camp by every account. So you're diluting the offense there. And remember, Higbee and Everett are both healthy. And then the last one's Chris Godwin. And there's some nuts and bolts structural stuff here. If they're a two tight end offense, that means fewer slot snaps for Chris Godwin, which is that great Bruce Arians role to help fuel him. There's the garbage time issue. A lot of his value, extra value, came from garbage time last year. I don't think the Bucs are going to have nearly as much garbage time. They're not going to have the frenetic, wide open games that Jameis Winston gave them. But also, you're just hearing that Tom Brady and Mike Evans are establishing more chemistry than Brady and Godwin. That's a big variable in this offense. Scotty Miller, every day out of Tampa training camp, we hear something good about him. He's going to play a role in this offense. And then Pewter Report, and again, we talked about, you learn the beat writer terrain. Pewter Report was doing team-specific, very intense coverage before SB Nation or before blogs, before any of that. And Scott Reynolds, who's been there forever, Scott Reynolds, at my very first Senior Bowl back in 2007, was one of the people who like showed me around and said, this is the Senior Bowl, this is how things work here. That's how long he's been doing this. He wrote, it wasn't him, it was one of his colleagues, that they suspect that Godwin is nursing an injury, that he just doesn't look like Chris Godwin from last year. Second, third round pick, no.
Okay, so let's touch on these guys' tags just super quick. Justin Jefferson, I was a huge fan of his tape coming out. Okay, so, but if it all comes down to if Olabisi Johnson is going to be the quote unquote starter, right? If he's going to be on the field, that takes Justin Jefferson off the field, right? In a heavy 12 personnel system, and especially when we had concerns of does Justin Jefferson have the ability to play outside? He played like it was something like 12 total snaps outside, you know, at LSU. It was all throughout the slot. So Justin Jefferson right now, is that someone that you're I'll just say this. I have not, for all the love that I have for Justin Jefferson, I actually have not ended up with him anywhere in my drafts.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have to worry about Tajae Sharpe, too. They signed him this offseason, and apparently Justin Jefferson, he fell behind because he was on the COVID list at the start of training camp, and then when he came back, that he was not impressing. And again, everybody's got glowing reports. It's when you hear something negative is what you start to worry, and I got worried about Justin Jefferson because they said he was not excelling as much as they thought he would against some backup cornerbacks. So I am not taking Justin Jefferson in a redraft league. It's a lower volume offense. Adam Thielen, this offense runs through. And think about it. Even last year with Thielen out of the offense for 8 games, Stephon Diggs saw like 96 targets. You know what I mean? That's Stephon Diggs. So I'm not relying on Justin Jefferson in redraft formats. I've moved him down. He's outside of my top 60 wide receivers. I can make the case for him to be outside the top 80 wide receivers this year.
I mean, in for comparison here, Robbie Anderson, wide receiver 58, Alan Lazard, 59, Justin Jefferson, wide receiver 57. So then you have Anderson right behind him, Alan Lazard, and then DeSean Jackson at wide receiver 61. At this point, I would be fine with all three of those guys over Justin Jefferson. And then you touched on Cooper Kupp. This is one that we're all three going to agree on, I believe. Looking at Cooper Kupp, I want Robert Woods in this offense, especially at his price tag. Now, granted, Cooper Kupp was all the way up at like wide receiver 10 when draft season first started. And now he's fallen. He's down at wide receiver 19, I believe, in wide receiver 18 in ECR. So we've seen his price tag fall a little bit. The rank of the experts are falling a little bit on him too, but I'm in complete agreement. I want Robert Woods in this offense over Cooper Kupp, especially, and it's kind of a similar argument, looking at 12 personnel and Tyler Higbee, Gerald Everett, going to be on this field. You'll have Van Jefferson, who's an outside receiver, and then Cooper Kupp doesn't play outside, so he's going to come in on those third downs, which just takes away his target volume. Again, incredible production throughout the first half of the season, and then once they made that offensive philosophy shift in weeks 9 through 17, Cooper Kupp was the wide receiver 31 in all of fantasy football, comparative to the wide receiver 2 through weeks 1 through 8, so I'm in complete agreement there. And then we're looking at your final guy that you mentioned, Chris Godwin. This is one that I'm going to disagree on personally, just because I still want Chris Godwin, even at his price tag. This is someone who I want to invest in. I think that Scotty Miller is a fine slot receiver, but if you have, and this is the caveat, if you have Chris Godwin at full health, Godwin is a superior talent to Scotty Miller. And so, and Godwin has shown that he has the ability to play on the outside. This isn't like Cooper Kupp, right? This isn't a Cooper Kupp situation where he can only play the slot. They moved him into the slot because he was good there, but he can also succeed on the outside. We saw that his first couple of seasons in the NFL. So, Tags, let's just touch on Chris Godwin here. If he is fully healthy, are you fine with his price tag?
If he's fully healthy, I would be into him in his price tag. I am worried a little bit about Scotty Miller. I did a draft last night with the CBS guys, and I had the number 3 pick overall. I took Ezekiel Elliott there, and then it came back to me all the way at 210, and Godwin was still there. So was George Kittle. I chose to go with Kittle with that pick because I am a little worried about Chris Godwin. And then when he came back, it was like, all right, now I have to really think about if I'm going to take Godwin there at the top of the third. And it felt like I was going to, but he did go to one of those other teams. So I did hesitate to pull the trigger a little bit yesterday. I do think that he fits Tom Brady's skill set a little bit better, but if this team does go 3 wide, I worry about that third wide receiver. They never really replaced Breshad Perriman on the perimeter with a bigger body, a guy that can stretch the field. Scotty Miller is fast. I know he's got like, I think it's 4.3 speed, but he's not a perimeter wide receiver. He's like 5'11", 170 pounds. He matches what Tom Brady has thrown to for much of his career over the middle of the field. So that's the part I'm concerned about with Godwin. I think, and I've been saying this forever, is that once you get outside Michael Thomas, Davante Adams, Julio Jones, there's so much parity at the wide receiver position. And I think that's why everyone is going running back in the industry, because they feel like to take someone like DeAndre Hopkins or Chris Godwin, you can get someone like Allen Robinson a round later or Adam Thielen and then be like, okay, I think I'm going to get similar production. Whereas the running backs drop off so much once you get outside those top 2 rounds.
Yeah. All right, let's move over to the quarterback position. We're going to double up here, Sig. So let's go with the guy that you like and then the guy that you like less comparative to their ECR.
Like Joe Burrow, don't like Daniel Jones. And I will say as an aside that the quarterback rankings this year are pretty accurate. There's not a lot. That's why I had to go outside of the top 10. Mm-hmm. At tight end, it was really hard to pick a tight end. Really, really hard to pick a tight end. There's like five or six guys I want to say. I'm just going to say Blake Jarwin because I like talking about Blake Jarwin. And I'm not on board with Darren Waller.
Okay. All right. So let's touch on Joe Burrow. I keep moving Joe Burrow up my rankings, guys. Even though he has a tough start to the season with Los Angeles, the Chargers defense, we saw them lose Derwin James, right? And that's something that is going to impact this defense. I really feel for Derwin James. He just can't stay on the field, and he's an amazing talent. I want to see him on the football field. He's going to miss this season, which is terrible for this defense. But I'm not crazy about the week one matchup, but after that, they should get cooking. And Joe Burrow is a phenomenal talent. We talk about training camp reports. Everything coming out is that that he's succeeding and that he's doing really, really well. So Tags, Joe Burrow, really quick, where do you have him in your rankings?
I have him at quarterback 14. And I want to ask Sig. Sig, if you're taking the late round quarterback approach, where are you okay taking Burrow as your starter for week one? Or is it more like you're going to take him as a platoon type guy? You might take someone like Stafford and then grab Burrow later in the draft because you just want to, you want a sturdy option and you want the upside option.
Yeah, exactly. So Matthew Stafford, Ben Roethlisberger will be another one that I'm fine with. And really Roethlisberger, if we're looking at schedules, Roethlisberger with the Giants week one.
Yeah.
Feels a little better than Stafford against Chicago, or Tyrod Taylor on the other side of the game, for instance, or maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, if you want to go even later against Arizona. He had four touchdowns in both of the games against Arizona last year. So I think there's ways to mix and match with late round. But I also think that benching Joe Burrow, while it's the right move in terms of risk, we might see right away that it was the wrong move just because, fellas, I know that you're seeing this, right? I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals beat writers are saying, well, the obvious MVP of camp is Joe Burrow. You know what I mean? Like, just, it's not even a thought process. Like, if you sat there and watched the practices, you're like, yeah, Joe Burrow. I mean, he's mythical. He came down, he was born from the stars or something. Really? I mean, he's going to elevate. And if you see the quotes and things coming out of camp, he's not a rookie that's imposed by his first NFL training camp and all these veterans and fitting in. He's already playing the game within the game. You know, he's already improving, riffing with his teammates, figuring out the best ball placement and the best way to throw to this guy and the best way to throw to this guy. I know the offensive line could be a critical point of failure. So, I mean, it's possible, but I just think that Joe Burrow, you watched him at LSU and said, he's not like anything we've seen before. And I think that we're going to see something similar. And I'm excited. And I think that with fantasy football, in these times, one of the things about fantasy football is great is it's a way to share in greatness with a capital G. Whenever whoever is your favorite player does something great, you can feel that energy flowing through you. And like I said, I want to catch on, you know, I just want to grab his coattails in some way and catch on. I'm excited for Bengals fans, long-suffering Bengals fans. I think this is going to be a franchise transforming player. And if you were to ask me the most exciting developments of watching football in 2020, Joe Burrow as a pro quarterback is maybe number one.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, and it's not like it's a rookie quarterback coming in that doesn't have great receiving options, right? Like, Joe Burrow is a phenomenal talent all by himself. I'm obviously all on board, but then you're looking at AJ Green when he's on the field, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, John Ross. I mean, then Joe Mixon, hopefully out of the backfield, Giovanni Bernard. Like, it's a great offense to put him in. Daniel Jones, I'm in complete agreement here. I do not want Daniel Jones on my roster until week 12 this year. You look at his schedule, he's going up against some insane defenses throughout the first 10 weeks of the season. Then they have their bye in week 11. Then they play the Cincinnati Bengals week 12. That is going to be the first week that I recommend Daniel Jones as a starter. I'm calling it now. Like, I just don't want any part of Daniel Jones. Tags, you in agreement there?
I could see it against Dallas and Washington in weeks 5 and 6, but the first 4 weeks, Pittsburgh, I mean, I know there's people listening right now that are saying there's no way you could project, you know, strength of schedule this early in the season, but we do know that the Steelers are year in, year out. They're a good defense. They got even better last year. They're a young team that's added talent. You go to the Bears, obviously get Akeem Hicks back. That's a defense that's been very, very good. San Francisco, one of the best defenses in the NFL last year. They could take a step back, sure, but do you feel comfortable playing Daniel Jones against them? Probably not. So I'm with you guys in this one. The only leagues I want Daniel Jones in is two quarterback formats, because he's a guy that presents a decent floor with his rushing ability and his upside in better matchups. But outside of that, he's a streamer for me.
Really quick question here, guys, because we got to move on. But Daniel Jones, the Jameis Winston of this season, where we could see them throw a ton of interceptions, was the qualification here as far as Daniel Jones. Like, just throwing the ball a ton of interceptions.
I'll say Gardner Minshew.
I'd say it's close to Trubisky, man. I'm not kidding. I'm serious. No. If you actually look at the numbers that Daniel Jones did last year in terms of the ups and downs he went through this season, if you look at Trubisky's 2018, there are a lot of parallels there.
That's not comforting. Okay. Blake Jarwin. You mentioned Blake Jarwin. This is a guy I'm on board with. I have him as my tight end 12 this year. I love him and his opportunity in this offense. We don't need to spend a ton of time. Darren Waller is the one that I'm really interested to hear your reasoning super quick before we move on to a fun little game here, Sig.
You can find me on Twitter at Sigmund Bloom if you want to debate Blake Jarwin, because I love the Blake Jarwin debate, but I think he's set up for massive success. Waller, it's just the Raiders, even with Tyrell Williams and the torn labrum, they've reloaded with Bryan Edwards, who's another one of those rookies every practice observer is just wowed by, and Henry Ruggs, and a healthier Hunter Renfrow, and Josh Jacobs more involved in the passing game. It's a question, right? If you think Darren Waller's numbers last year were a product of Darren Waller is just that good, then he deserves to go as the fifth or sixth tight end off the board. But if you think it was because there weren't other options for Derek Carr to throw to, then Waller's necessarily going to shrink in terms of target share, and he's not a red zone target. He's not somebody who's going to get those touchdowns to put you over the top. So I just think tight end 6 to 10 is kind of a no man's land. I mean, Hayden Hurst, there's some upside there. Tyler Higbee, there's some upside. But it's the tight ends in the top 3 or 4 and the tight ends outside of the top 10 that are most exciting this year.
Yep, I agree. All right, guys, let's wrap up today's show with a fun little game. I've got 4 different categories: quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. I'm going to list a question and then 5 players to start. We'll alternate from Tags to Sig, and then you'll guess which one fits the question. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Yes.
All right. Fantasy odd man out. Tags, you need to rebound from your performance.
Don't start with me, Yates. Do not start.
All right, here we go. Tags, we're looking at these quarterbacks here. I've got 5 of them for you. They are Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen, and Matt Ryan. Again, I can list those for you after this question. Here we go. Which player had the fewest passing yards from weeks 9 through 16? Again, that's Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen, and Matt Ryan.
I'm going to go Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray is correct. 1,409 passing yards from weeks 9 through 16. In comparison, Matt Ryan, 1,983 passing yards. So Tags, you get that one right. That is 4 points, and then it counts down as we go through these questions. All right, so Sig, over to you. Which player had the lowest touchdown rate? Again, your options now are Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen, and Matt Ryan. Which player had the lowest touchdown rate?
Lowest touchdown rate? I'm going to say Deshaun Watson, actually, just because I know that the offense really ran through him, but I'm kind of stumped here.
Yeah, this was a tough one for me. It's actually Matt Ryan. Looking at Ryan last year, insane passing volume,
that's right. Yeah,
like 684 pass attempts, and then only, I think, 25 passing touchdowns. So he had a 4.2 touchdown rate. Russell Wilson, 6.0 for comparison there.
Oh, his career mark is like, is that high? Russell Wilson's ridiculous. One of the best quarterbacks of all time.
I agree. All right, Tags, back over to you. The players that are remaining, Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. Which player had the fewest rush attempts? Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson.
This has got to be Russell Wilson.
You are correct, sir. Russell Wilson with 75 rush attempts. Again, for comparison, Josh Allen, 109 rush attempts last year. So, Tags, you get 2 points there. Sig, let's wrap it up here. Josh Allen and Deshaun Watson are the players. Which player had the higher sack rate, Josh Allen or Deshaun Watson?
Sack rate always makes me think Deshaun Watson.
Yeah,
you would be correct. Deshaun Watson gets abused behind that offensive line. 8.2 sack rate comparative to Josh Allen, 7.6. So Josh Allen was the fantasy odd man out here. Guys, are we overlooking Josh Allen in fantasy football this year?
Yeah, I'm with you. That's exactly how I feel. I don't think he's a plug and play QB1 every week.
Okay, so Sig got that one right. All right, guys, 6-1 throughout the first category. We're moving on to running backs. The players are Miles Sanders, Aaron Jones, Kenyon Drake, Austin Eckler, and Chris Carson. So, Sig, which player had the fewest games of 100-plus scrimmage yards? which player had the fewest games of 100-plus scrimmage yards, Miles Sanders, Aaron Jones, Kenyon Drake, Austin Eckler, or Chris Carson?
I'm on the fence between Sanders and Drake. I'll go Miles Sanders, but I'm unsure.
This one was close. It was tough for me to answer because, again, Sanders didn't fully break out until Jordan Howard missed some time. Kenyon Drake, of course, being traded. Kenyon Drake is the correct answer here. He had three games of 100-plus scrimmage yards. Miles Sanders had five.
Wow.
Wow.
In comparison, Chris Carson, seven. Seven games of 100-plus scrimmage yards. When he's healthy, he's going to produce for fantasy football. All right, let's move on. Tags. Which player had the most fumbles? The options here are Miles Sanders, Aaron Jones, Austin Eckler, or Chris Carson.
This one's easy, right? It's Chris Carson.
Yeah, you would be correct. even though he is extremely productive, Chris Carson fumbles the ball like nobody's business. That tags, that is 3 points for you there. All right, Sig, to you, which player had the lowest yards per carry average? Miles Sanders, Aaron Jones, or Austin Eckler?
I think it's Sanders because of the struggles early in the season, but I could be wrong. I mean, it's going to keep saying Miles Sanders until it's the right answer.
Stick with it. Which player had the lowest yards per carry average? It's Austin Eckler at 4.2, Aaron Jones at 4.57, and Miles Sanders at 4.59. So Austin Eckler made his, close to 1,000 yards throughout the air. That was what inflated his fantasy value last year. In comparison to these other guys, wasn't as efficient on the ground. So Eckler was the answer there. All right, tags. Which player scored fewer points during the fantasy playoffs? Your options are Miles Sanders or Aaron Jones.
Scored fewer points?
Yes, correct. Which player scored fewer points during the fantasy playoffs?
Fairly certain that it's Miles Sanders, just because, I mean, I know both of them were getting a lot of touches at that time, but I think Jamal Williams was out for a little bit. Miles Sanders missed week 17, I think. I'm going to say that Miles Sanders scored less.
You are correct, sir. Aaron Jones with 68.3 fantasy points during the fantasy playoffs. Miles Sanders with 57.7. Jones was dominant during that time. So, Tags, that is another point for you. We are now 10-1. All right, let's go to wide receivers here. Tags, you're starting us off. All right, which player has the highest standard deviation in our updated ECR? Of course, that means which player has the widest ranking, difference in rankings, for sure. Right? So the options are Chris Godwin, DeAndre Hopkins, Kenny Galladay, Allen Robinson, or Mike Evans.
Oh,
which player are the experts split on? Chris Godwin, DeAndre Hopkins, Kenny Galladay, Allen Robinson, or Mike Evans?
I'm going to say Kenny Galladay.
That is incorrect. It is actually Mike Evans.
That was my... Damn it. I was going forward between those two.
Yeah, Mike Evans is the answer here, guys. Big difference, actually. Comparative to Chris Godwin, there's the number here that I've got is 1.7 for Chris Godwin or 3.5 for Mike Evans. So that's the difference there. All right, Sig, over to you. Which player had the lowest catch rate over the past two seasons? Your options are Kenny Galladay, Allen Robinson, DeAndre Hopkins, and Chris Godwin. Lowest catch rate over the past two seasons.
You know, part of me wants to say Kenny Galladay just because that's kind of his game. But part of me wants to say DeAndre Hopkins because he gets so many targets. I'll go with Galladay.
That is the correct choice. Kenny Galladay with a 57.4 catch percentage. Here's the difference. DeAndre Hopkins, 70%.
Wow.
Isn't that ridiculous? On his average of 150 targets a year, still getting 70% catch rate. That's ridiculous. So that's 3 points for Sig there. All right. Tags, over to you. Which player saw the fewest red zone targets in 2019? The options here are Chris Godwin, Allen Robinson, and DeAndre Hopkins. Which player saw the fewest red zone targets?
They are. This one, I'm gonna say Allen Robinson. I don't think the Bears were in the red zone enough for him to be up with those guys.
This one shocked me. Allen Robinson, the clear leader here.
Oh, wow.
20 red zone targets last season. Chris Godwin with 12. DeAndre Hopkins with 13. So Chris Godwin is the answer here. That was insane for me to believe, or for me to see. Allen Robinson with 20 red zone targets last season, even though they were not in the red zone frequently. So Chris Godwin, the answer there. All right, Sig, let's wrap up the wide receivers here. Which player has more multi-touchdown games since 2015? Your options are DeAndre Hopkins or Allen Robinson. Which player has more multi-touchdown games since 2015?
Since Allen Robinson missed a year, it seems like I should just say DeAndre Hopkins, but I'm still going to say Allen Robinson.
You would have been correct to say DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins with 9 multi-touchdown games since 2015, Allen Robinson with 7. So again, it's close, even with...
It seemed like Zig was being set up there. I knew exactly what he was doing, but I was like, it's got to be Hopkins, right?
That's like old standardized test trick.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Exactly. Hey, I didn't make up the questions. Okay, all right, we're moving on to tight ends here. Sig is up first. The options, the players here are Darren Waller, Evan Engram, Hunter Henry, Hayden Hurst, and Tyler Higbee. Okay, so who is ranked lowest by 2019's number 2 draft rankings expert, Pat Fitzmaurice? Again, those are Darren Waller, Evan Engram, Hunter Henry, Hayden Hurst, and Tyler Higbee. Who is ranked lowest by Pat Fitzmaurice?
Pat Fitzmaurice is a mensch, by the way. One of the nicest people
in
history.
Yep.
He's a fantastic human being. And now this is turning into like psychoanalyze Pat Fitzmaurice. His, as your number 2 ranking alludes to, he's a very level-headed ranker. So I'm going to say Higbee is the lowest because that's the easiest one to say that you know, people are getting out over their skis, putting him in the tight end one tier.
That's what I would have guessed too, but it's actually Hayden Hurst. And
oh no,
I saw that and I was a little bit concerned because I have Hurst well higher than Pat. And so if I'm looking at Pat's rankings and I'm going, I am a little concerned at this point. So yeah, Hayden Hurst, he has all the way down at 9. He has Waller, Engram, Higbee, Hunter Henry, and then Hayden Hurst. So, all right, guys, tags up to you. Which player had the lowest yards per target average in 2019? Again, your options now are Evan Engram, Tyler Higbee, Darren Waller, and Hunter Henry. The lowest yards per target average.
I think this has to be Hunter Henry.
It would be a good guess, but it's incorrect.
Boo.
It's actually startling. The difference here, Darren Waller up at 9.7 yards per target. Mm-hmm. Evan Engram at 6.9. Big difference. Darren Waller at 9.7, Hunter Henry 8.7, Tyler Higbee 8.4, and then a clear drop off there to Evan Engram all the way down at 6.9.
Wow.
All right, Sig, back to you. Which player had the lowest catch rate in 2019? Your options are Hunter Henry, Darren Waller, and Tyler Higbee. Lowest catch rate.
I'm just going to say Hunter Henry because Waller and Higbee just had more receptions.
You would be correct. Hunter Henry with 72.4 catch rate, Tyler Higbee at 77.5, and Darren Waller at 76.9.
Jeez, they're all high.
2 points. I know. Yeah, those are really high marks for those guys. So, all right, last one. Last question here, Tags. Let's get this one right. No pressure. Which player had fewer yards after catch per reception? Which player had fewer yards after catch per reception? Is it Darren Waller or is it Tyler Higbee?
Who had fewer?
Yes.
Higbee.
You are correct, sir. Tyler Higbee with 6.1, Darren Waller with 6.9.
Waller's so a Waller monster after the catch. Think about it. Like Derek Carr throws the ball a yard from the line of scrimmage, and Waller makes it happen.
Yep, Waller, the clear guy here. And again, we talked about him earlier on in this podcast, but from all metrics, he succeeded last season. So, all right, guys, that is Fantasy Odd Man out. And that's going to do it for today's show, guys. So we know you're crazy busy right now, Sig, but thank you, and we really appreciate it for carving out some time to chat with us.
This is fun. This is why I do this. And by the way, the next time Mike and I do this, I want to get him drunk first. And then we'll see how you do. And by the way, this is fantastic. And I just wanted to, I did a show this weekend with the DLF guys called Dynasty Game Night, which is just fantastic. So for folks that like this, I like it. I mean, I want to keep doing this for like the next hour.
Right.
Maybe we can all get drunk and go on that.
Those guys do an awesome job. And by the way, anytime that you hear me say waiver wire speed dial on the show, understand that it came from Sigmund Bloom. Stamp.
Okay. Don't forget that you can find him on Twitter at Sigmund Bloom, guys. And also don't forget that you can find both Tags and I on Twitter as well at KyleYNFL and at Mike Taglier NFL. Tags, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I love Sig. I love you. I love our fans. I love the listeners. I love everybody. And I'm getting to the point where I'm excited now. And now that we've talked about Sig's rankings and gone through everything, I'm just getting more excited by the day. Football's going to be here shortly and can't wait to enjoy the season with you guys.
Absolutely. Same here. Huge thank you to FanDuel for sponsoring today's podcast. Don't forget that this season, there's a brand new way to play fantasy football on FanDuel. Introducing Best Ball Contests, the simplest way to play season-long fantasy. If you're new to FanDuel, you can even get a 20% bonus on your first deposit, up to $500 when you sign up at FanDuel.com/FantasyPros. So be sure to go to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros to start drafting for best ball at FanDuel. And I want to make sure that we thank Trophy Smack for sponsoring today's podcast. I absolutely love Trophy Smack, and I know that you're going to too. Trophy Smack is offering our listeners a free championship ring with any trophy or belt purchase. Just add your free ring to cart with your epic trophy or belt and use the promo code FANTASYPROS at checkout. Visit trophysmack.com/fantasypros to customize your league's trophy now. Again, that's trophysmack.com/fantasypros. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. For Mike Tagliere and Sigmund Bloom, I'm Kyle Yates, and we'll see you next time. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a proof of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble. What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.